Passer maintenant la parole à Sarah Rose. Je ne sais pas si la présentation sera en anglais, mais en tout cas, ça sera sur le rétablissement avec l'impact sur les politiques et l'organisation des usagers, avec quelqu'un qui a une expérience autour de Dorset Mental Health Forum.
Bonsoir. Hello. Thank you for welcoming me here today to talk to you a little bit about the organization that I work for and also IMROC, which is an international organization that has been designed by the Center for Mental Health and the NHS Confederation and came out of some of the Department for Health in the UK. I'm talking to you today as a layperson. I'm not a clinician. I don't work in mental health services, but I work alongside clinical colleagues. I work for an organisation that is a small organisation based in the southwest of England. So the aims of what I hope to present to you today is that I'm going to give you an overview of our understanding of personal recovery and the policy context and the implications for services that we've seen in the UK in the last 6 or 7 years. I'm going to talk to you about the role of IMROC in developing recovery-orientated services in the UK and beyond. And I'm finally going to use a case example of something that we've done in Dorset using some of the methodology. So what is IMROC? IMROC is an organisation that works nationally and internationally. It's a collection of individuals. We have a range of people that work for IMROC, from psychiatrists, psychologists, leaders within healthcare, leaders within the voluntary sector, and people who use services. And we come together to really think about how can we shape and develop systems, services, and cultures that support recovery and well-being. The Dorset Mental Health Forum, which is the small organisation that I've come from to talk to you today, is an independent charity. We've been going for a number of years, and we're run and led by people with their own experiences of mental health issues. We have a range of funding. We are funded by the NHS, but we also have funding from local authority and grant makers. What that does is it enables us to maintain our independence. So we offer consultation, representation. We're a strategic partner to mental health services and broader. And we're a recovery-orientated organisation. Every single one of our staff, and we have around 100, has their own lived experience of mental health issues. That's from our chief executive down through the organisation. And we offer an opportunity to reframe our experiences. So think about how we can utilise the experiences of things that we've been through to add value to the work that we do. More importantly than that, we're a social movement. We fundamentally believe that people who experience severe and enduring mental health issues have the same right to opportunities as anyone else. And we feel that a lot of our role is to help to facilitate that, to listen to people and create opportunities. I'm going to come back to this later, because it's so important in thinking about why IMROC exists. And when I talk to you about the methodology that IMROC uses around organisational change, you'll see that these guiding principles of co-production are absolutely key to everything that we do. So when I talk to you about recovery, what am I talking about? What is our understanding, our working definition, if you will, of recovery? We believe that recovery in mental health is about helping people live meaningful and satisfying lives, as defined by them. This means understanding how they make sense of what's happened to them and what's important for them for the future. The principles underlying recovery come from a careful study of the accounts of a range of people who have experienced mental health problems. And key to that is their experience of how they've gone on to build meaningful lives. What are the key turning points? What are the things for them that made the most difference and enabled them to live a life beyond their diagnosis or beyond their mental health condition? These principles have international validity, and they're common to people who use mental health services and also to people who don't. We fundamentally believe that anyone who's been through a life-changing event, such as a bereavement or a divorce or losing a job, can't go back to being who they were before and actually has to understand and learn to live with things moving forward. The challenge for mental health professionals and for services is therefore to work out how best to support people to live the lives that they want. At the very least, it's about helping the person to realise their potential, use their strengths, their resources, and try not to put unnecessary barriers in the way. So when I talk to you about personal recovery today, I'm thinking about the influence that it's had in our national policy. So in 2011, there was a paper that talked about more people with mental health problems will recover. Entitled No Health Without Mental Health, it was a fundamental driver for really thinking about people in the context of their lives. Moving forward, another really pivotal paper was around closing the gap. And in that paper, it describes that high quality mental health services with an emphasis on recovery should be commissioned in all areas of the country. And that really was a fundamental turning point. IMROC was already going by that point, but it was really thinking about how organisations could embrace a methodology that enabled a more recovery-orientated focus. So the key principles that we use that come from Perkins and Repper is really about hope. It's about maintaining a belief that it is still possible to pursue one's chosen life goals and that there is a unique, and hope is therefore always personal. Relationships, people tell us, are central to carrying hope. And often when we talk to people who use services, they describe their loved ones as holding the hope for them at times of distress. It's about control. The importance of achieving some sense of control over one's life and one's symptoms. It's about choice. And that's again what people tell us. It's not about having ultimate control and not needing the help of professionals, of caregivers, and a range of other tools. It's about having some sense of what is happening and what it means for me. It's also about opportunity. It's the need to build a life beyond an illness, beyond a diagnosis. Being part of a community, belonging, having access to the same opportunities that exist for any other citizen, whether it's housing, employment, social integration. And it's also about addressing stigma. It's about not feeling othered or different because of a diagnosis. It's really important when we're thinking about what our definition and our working definition as IMROC of recovery is, to think about what recovery isn't. It's not a new method of treatment. It's not something that staff do to patients. Staff can't make people recover. Third sector organisations can't take care of people and push them into recovery. It's something that's individual for the person and therefore meaningful for the person. Recovery isn't a set of beliefs which depend upon being able to cure the person's symptoms. We have a lot of people that work with us and in our networks that live well with ongoing symptoms. It's not a version of anti-psychiatry. Helping to support recovery does not mean abandoning traditional treatments, including medication. They are helpful to individuals. The question is, how are they offered? How are people given information and how are people enabled to be part of the choice around what might be helpful for them in their situation? Recovery isn't a model which believes that patients should decide everything. Recovery is based on the principles of co-production. And it's important that staff and patients work well together. There are times when someone cannot make decisions about themselves because they're so unwell. And there's a reliance then that this moves between the two. But the important thing is that both parties are engaged throughout the whole process. It's not an approach that has relevance only in mental health either. Expert patients, peer support, self-management, choice and control are relevant to a range of long-term conditions. So IMROC has created a simple evidence-based methodology. It's identified 10 key challenges for organisations that wish to support recovery. What we know is that training staff alone isn't enough to change behaviour. And what we have to do is create a culture, create a vision, create an environment where recovery-oriented practice can flourish. It uses a simple methodology based on agreed goal setting, implementation and review. Plan, do, study, PDSA, which is the most effective method for organisational change. It provides on-site expert technical support and mutual support through action learning sets and through communities of practice. It's around a range of expertise coming together to work out a way forward. So the 10 key organisational challenges identified are as follows. It's around changing the nature of day-to-day interactions. It's about offering co-produced learning and development opportunities to staff, alongside people who use services and their families. We find there's an awful lot of value in that peer-to-peer learning and also from identity-to-identity learning. So people who use services learning alongside family and carers, learning alongside clinicians. Recovery-focused leadership is essential at all levels. It creates the culture and it visions recovery. User involvement is replaced by fully resourced, and that's absolutely key. Co-production can only happen if it's resourced effectively. People can't co-produce unless they are able to understand what they can bring to the process and that they're facilitated to do that. One of the cores is establishing a recovery education centre, an open access service where people can access and understand more about what recovery means to them. And again, it's not just about people who use services. It's around transforming the workforce, creating opportunities for peer support workers and other lived experience roles. It's also about staff working in services feeling able to understand and tap into their own human experiences and use them in a way that has value. It's about reducing restrictive practice, changing conceptions of risk as to something to be avoided, and working towards understanding what does safety actually mean. We understand what safety means in the context of a clinical environment, but actually how much do we understand what safety means to an individual in the context of their lives? It's around prioritisation of life goals. It's around thinking about valuing and including family members and friends. And finally, it's about supporting staff to cope with the stresses that are inevitable working in a mental health setting. And I mentioned it earlier with the principles, but co-production is really at the heart of everything that we do with IMROC and also as the Dorset Mental Health Forum. It's a radically different way of thinking about mental health service delivery. It takes courage and it takes investment, and that's not necessarily financial investment. The four elements are that it recognises people as assets, that it values the contribution that they can make. It's around the promotion of reciprocity to build trust and mutual respect, and it's about social networks. People receiving services thus become more than a bundle of needs to be met. They become part of the solution to the crisis in public services and not simply the problem that public services are trying to fix. There's a range of documentation available on IMROC's website, which you may find of interest after my presentation today. So what has IMROC achieved? It's worked with over 70 organisations, raising awareness of fundamental importance of life, work, housing, roles and relationships. And it's co-produced tangible changes. It's facilitated the development of over 800 peer support workers. They're people with lived experience of mental health issues who are recruited, trained and placed and work within local mental health settings. It's established over 80 recovery colleges in England, Ireland, Italy, Australia, places where people with lived experience and professionals, carers and others can come together to understand more about their experiences. It's introduced new ways of thinking about the assessment and management of risk, moving from risk to safety. And it's reduced the use of physical restraint and forcible medication on acute wards, improving the quality of care and decreasing staff stress. So that's an overview of IMROC. I'd now like to take you briefly through a case study of what's happened in Dorset, which is where I work. We had a problem in Dorset. We're a strange county. We have a number of urban areas and we also have a large rural population. And our mental health services have some really, really good things happening within them, but there's not enough of them and they don't always meet the needs of people, as is the case for a range of mental health services across the UK. So commissioners had a problem. They wanted to think about a new way of developing services, but they tried a range of doing that before. So they worked with IMROC to think about how can we actually create a review of our acute mental health services that is more meaningful and looks at more than just what we can deliver, but thinks about people's experiences and really listens to people around actually how can their experiences shape a better offer for crisis. The ACP review, as it's described, took 2 years, and it started with really engaging with people, that staff that work in services, communities, people who use mental health services. And it talked to people who were in the community. It also talked to people who were currently in hospital. It then developed a range of options based on all of that view seeking. We then went through a very laborious process of NHS assurance. And then we consulted again. We tested, we sense checked to make sure that we got things right. And we're now in the phase of implementation. And what we've done with the implementation is we have a general rule that this is all about learning, that we won't get it absolutely right, but we will learn from every opportunity. The Wellbeing Recovery Partnership has been working in Dorset for 10 years, and it's been key to the developments of the Acute Care Pathway Review. It was established in 2009, with putting people with lived experience at the heart of mental health services. And it works at all levels, not just on the ground, mirroring lived experience and professional expertise, from thinking about strategy, from what does the organisation need to do, to actually how do we want people to experience it. And it ensures that people's priorities are equally acknowledged, not always valued, because sometimes an organisation has to do what an organisation has to do, but it's about the listening. In 2011, we became a national IMROC demonstration site. And to be quite honest with you, we were quite unsure why that was. We weren't doing a huge amount of recovery-orientated practice, but what we did have was a really established partnership. In 2012, the Recovery Education Centre opened, which was key, and I'll explain why in a moment. And then in 2018, we've developed a co-delivered partnership crisis offer. What came out of the view seeking, what came out of the development, was that we needed a different approach to crisis. We needed opportunities that people could access on their own terms in a way that was meaningful for them. We also didn't have enough bed stock, so we needed more inpatient offer for people who were significantly and severely unwell. So there were a range of services that we wanted to explore, from retreats, which are crisis drop-ins, to a connection service, which is a telephone service where people can call and actually talk about the distress they're in and where professionals can find out what the options are for people who are unwell. So why did we need an alternative? Dorset has a higher than national average rate of serious mental illness in some areas, and we have different mental health presentations in different areas of the county as well. There are around 8,000 adults registered as having a serious mental illness. And 66 of those are from the conurbation of the county. There's not enough preventative options for people in crisis, and it's leading to a really difficult problem with overstretched acute hospitals in the two urban areas. So what do people who live in Dorset say when we ask them as part of the review? They said they want to define their own crisis. They said they want access to help when they need it, close to where they live. They said that they want to have access to both clinical staff and also talk to someone who had experience of what they had. And they didn't want to have to tell their story over and over again. So how did lived experience inform service design? Well, the Recovery Education Centre that I mentioned earlier had given people a literacy by a range of people coming together. They'd learned to understand what recovery means for them, but also what does recovery mean more generally, more widely. So people were able to ask for more than they have done previously. There was 10 years of partnership work which we were building on. There are existing relationships built on trust and shared humanity, and we have colleagues across a range of organisations that were happy to bring their expertise. There were networks within services that we built on, and within the community, and we brought those together, and we developed a shared vision. Very importantly, people were facilitated to be heard. There was a lot of distrust, there was a lot of distress, and we needed to create a space for people to be heard in order for them then to be able to become part of the solution. It's part of the really important intentionality around co-production. You have to prepare for it. And it's about honesty, honesty, honesty. People taking personal responsibility. It's about the difficult conversations. Not everything that people wanted could be created. There was a very specific financial envelope that it had to be fitted within. But it was still about having the dialogue. And it was about saying, actually, no, we need more inpatient beds because there are people over here that need that. Or we need something that is more of a drop-in centre. So the retreat was one of those services that came out of the acute care pathway review and that I can hand on heart say was wholly co-produced and co-delivered with the community. It was launched in 2018 in April, and it's a service providing for people aged 18 and over. It's out of hours and it's open 365 days a year. People just present at the retreat. They may come in themselves, they may be brought by loved ones, they may be brought by police or ambulance. It's provided in partnership between the third sector and the healthcare provider, but it sits within services. There's lots of emergent models in the UK of crisis houses. A lot of them are peer-led and they're very, very good. And some of them are held by services. And again, they offer a really good service, but this is the only one that we're aware of that is delivered in total co-production, but is still sitting within mental health services. The retreat provides somewhere to go when things go wrong, and there's no need for a referral or to be open to mental health services. And surprisingly, we've seen an awful lot of people who have had quite severe mental health issues who have been nowhere near mental health services. It's staffed by mental health practitioners and peer specialists, people with their own lived experience, and provides support to preempt and prevent a self-defined crisis with the aim to avoid the need for emergency care, and it's not diagnostic specific. It was really important to us to create an environment that looked not like a clinical setting, that looked homely, that looked like somewhere you might feel safe, you might feel warm, you might feel able to talk to somebody in a way that perhaps you haven't done before. This building is where our community mental health team is located, so it is used for clinical purposes, but we had commitment from all the organisations to really think about how we could design something. And all of the decor and everything was all consulted on and influenced by people who use mental health services. We've only been open 7 months, but we're already beginning to see a significant impact. So from quarter one, 17-18, there were 345 attendances at the acute hospitals, A&E, people in distress. This year, so far, it's down to 121. And there's some significant movement for people who had the highest usage. So the person who used the most had 9 attendances in the previous year and now has only been once. 70% of people using the retreat April to August have not returned to accident and emergency. And 72% haven't returned to the one in the other part of the county. So, conclusions and next steps for us. I've only been able to share with you today a small example of what IMROC has achieved across the whole of the UK and internationally. But for us, it's really important to pay attention to the methodology that helped to guide us. We're still learning and we still expect to find out more things from the retreat. But we know that this service offers a valuable and credible addition to the pathway for people in crisis or seeking to prevent a crisis. It's helping people to make better use of mental health services. So it's not just about diverting. When people are in significant distress, they need access, quick access to services, and it's helping people ask for what it is that they need or to engage in services in a way that they've previously not been able to. The prevention aspect of the service is key. People often come to us in a significant crisis, but then they may come earlier next time because it's open access, so there's a continual learning cycle that happens. It offers compassion, care and kindness as its core values and has a values-based recruitment process to bring those things in across the whole staff body. The service decreases barriers to accessing support and other services. It's got a really good relationship with the local police, with the ambulance service and also with the psych liaison service within the hospitals. We're due a 6-month evaluation, which hopefully will give us some more information about the successes. We don't feel it's had as much impact on crisis services as we felt it would, but it's had a significant impact on our acute hospitals. We're looking to set up another one in another area of Dorset and test that out. It's a different type of place, so we'll see how that works. There are other changes to home treatment and crisis services that follow. But the success has come from working in partnership with people. And when I talk about people, I talk about all people. I talk about people that work in services, our community leaders, people who use mental health services, people who don't describe themselves as having any condition, but actually just a human being with an interest in what happens to the people in Dorset. We've been able to co-design and co-deliver a service that matters to them. We've been able to create an opportunity for people not just to have a voice, but to actually be part of the solution in creating a different experience for people who experience extreme mental distress in Dorset. Thank you.